So it's March 1st, 2014 in Ljubljana, Slovenia, and we're going to be doing meditation on forgiveness. So if I start talking too fast or if I say something in English you don't understand, please just ask, all right? We can just do this. If I'm slow down if I'm talking too fast. You should all have these papers. These are mostly for you to reference after the seminar for some nice meditation on forgiveness, although...
Yes.
What is that noise? What's this noise thing?
It's annoying.
It's really annoying, yes. It should be turned off. Okay. We'll work this out. So we're going to look first at a story of Emperor Pariket. Emperor Pariket was hunting. He was feeling hungry, thirsty, and tired. Actually, if I'm going to talk without a mic, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stand up. Yes. There we go. That makes it much easier for me. Because then I can see all of you, and I can... Oh, yes. Very good. And I'm going to move my water over here, and just set everything up, and that's all wonderful, and I'm going to put this over here. There we are, set. All right. So, Emperor Pariket... We're fine. Yes. Emperor Pariket was out hunting, and while hunting, he got hungry, tired, and thirsty. So you know that when we get hungry, tired, and thirsty, our level of tolerance goes down, right? Right? I feel like it's like each of us has a little container. Some of us have a big container of how much we can tolerate. And if we're already tolerating being sick or hungry or something, it's like our toleration cup is already full and little things become that much more difficult. We just don't have much more toleration ability. So when he was hungry, tired, and thirsty, he saw a group of huts, a group of small houses in the forest. And this was where some sages lived. So he entered one of the huts, and he was the emperor. So he was used to getting what he wanted. And he went into the hut and he said, "Give me some water." Maybe he said, "Please," I don't know. And there was a sage there who was sitting in meditation. The sage did not move, did not answer him. And again, "Give me some water. Hey, give me some water. You know, give me some water." And no response. So the emperor did something which is quite common. He decided that the sage was intentionally ignoring him. And he thought, this sage is one of the brahmanas. The brahmanas in that time, the sages, the religious people, they had authority over the government. And he thought, oh, this sage, because he has authority over the government, now he thinks he's so much higher than me that he doesn't even have to give me a drink of water when I'm an uninvited guest. He's become so proud, and therefore he's insulting me. He basically made up a little story in his own mind about what was happening. So then he thought, oh, he's insulted me. And as he's leaving the hut, the emperor sees a dead snake lying on the ground. So he uses his bow and picks up the dead snake and puts it like a necklace around the sage's neck, and then he leaves, gets back on his horse, and he leaves. Now, as he's on his horse going back to his castle, he starts thinking, maybe he wasn't insulting me. Maybe he was in a trance, because when you go into a yogic trance, one of the first things you do is called pratyahara. Pratyahara means that you withdraw your senses from the world. Like when we're in deep sleep and we're not aware of anything around us. So before you go into samadhi, internal absorption, you withdraw your senses from the world. And he thought, oh, maybe he was actually in samadhi. Maybe he wasn't insulting me. And then he felt a little sorry. And he thought, if the sage was really in samadhi, then I'm going to be in trouble with karma. And he said, if there's going to be a reaction, please let it come just to me, not to my family, and let it come to me soon. Meanwhile, back at the sage's hut, the sage's son, maybe 12 years old, was playing outside with some other boys. And he saw the emperor go in and out. And he also saw the emperor pick up this dead snake. So he went to see what was happening. And when he went back in the house, he saw his father in meditation with a dead snake around his neck. And he could understand that the emperor had done this. So he also made up a story in his head. And he said, oh, the emperor. The emperor now thinks he's better than the sages. He's supposed to listen to the sages, and now he is insulting us. Of course, he did insult them, but the boy exaggerated it and expanded it, that now the emperor has no respect for the sages. And in those days, sages had a lot of powers. I'm sure that the stories we get about wizards, you know, traveling wizards with staffs, comes from the fact that thousands of years ago, sages who would travel like that did indeed have powers. So this little boy, he was only like 12 years old, and he said, I curse the emperor to die in a week. Now you know what it's like when you're angry, and then you release your anger, then you get some intelligence again, right? So after he cursed the emperor, he started thinking, oh no, what did I do? I just cursed the emperor to die. And he started crying. And he was crying and crying for a long time, very loudly, and finally his father came out of the trance and found out the whole story. Actually, the father didn't care about the snake, he just threw it off. And he said, you have given a very heavy punishment for a very slight offense. And then he sent a message to the emperor telling him you have a week to live. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in commenting on this story, calls this tit for tat. I hurt you, you hurt me, I hurt you, you hurt me, I hurt you, you hurt me. And Prabhupada says this is silly. So, what happened here was the opposite of forgiveness. Somebody's done something bad to me, and I want to hurt them. Now we can also look at another story about Emperor Parikit, and this story happened before the story I just told. And this was when Emperor Parikit was touring his kingdom, and he saw a cow and a bull. He also saw a very low-class person dressed up like a king that was beating the cow and the bull and had broken 3 of the legs of the bull. And he said to the bull, who wasn't an ordinary bull, a very unusual question. He said, who has beaten you? Now that's a very strange question because the person who had beaten the bull was standing right there with his club or whatever he was using, and it was pretty obvious who had beaten the bull, but still he asked, who has beaten you? And the bull, who was not an ordinary animal, but was one of the celestial beings, the personality of religion, who had mystically taken the form of a bull, said, it's very hard to say why we suffer. He said, some people say that there's no explanation for suffering. Some people say that all suffering is an illusion and there is no suffering. Some people say that we are karmically responsible for our own suffering. Some people say that God is responsible for our suffering. He said, so I don't know who's made me suffer. That was the answer of the personality of religion. And when the Emperor Parikit heard this answer, he said, ah, you are not a bull. You are a divine being. You must be the personality of religion. But one of the most interesting things is that this mystical bull said, if you name the perpetrator, you are as guilty as the perpetrator. What is that? Now it did turn out that King Pericet, Emperor Pericet, did punish the man who was beating the bull. But this is the basic principle of what is not forgiveness. Not the opposite of forgiveness is you name the perpetrator and you want them to suffer. That person made me suffer, and that person should also suffer. That is the opposite of forgiveness. That is what forgiveness is not. Those two things. That person is guilty. It's because of that person that I am suffering, and I want that person to suffer as much or more than I have suffered. That is what forgiveness is not. That is the opposite of forgiveness. Is that pretty clear? Okay. So I'd like to ask all of you, why do we want those who hurt us to suffer? What is our motive? What is what's driving us? And the reason that this question is very important is that if we want to change our behavior and we want to change our attitude, it is essential to first understand why we are doing what we are doing now. I can't just change behavior if I don't look at the motive under it. Well, I can, but the change isn't very deep. You know, there are behaviorists talk about 8 ways of changing bad behavior. But 7 of those ways are superficial. And only one of them is deep. And the one that's deep is find out what the motivation is. And find a different way to satisfy the motivation. So what's our reason? Why do we want those who hurt us to suffer?
We think we'll get some relief.
Okay, we'll get some relief. So we think they hurt me, and if they suffer, I will feel relief. Yes, definitely. Why do we think it will give us relief?
Because we're envious.
Okay, that's one reason. We're envious. So nobody can have happiness that I don't have. No one's allowed to be happier than me, especially the person who made me unhappy. They're not allowed to be happier than I am. They have to be, you know, just envy is, okay, other people can have money, but not more than me. Other people can be beautiful, but not more than me. Other people can be smart, but not more than me. And best if it's a little less than me, right? Better if everyone else's wife is a little bit less attractive than mine. So, you know, that's envy, is people should have, no one should have as more than me and better if they have less than me. So if I'm miserable, envy is I don't want anyone else to be happy, especially the person who I see is responsible for my suffering. How dare they be happy when they made me unhappy? So envy is definitely one reason, and we might feel that if I do that, I'll get some relief, but I'm wondering why relief? That's a very important reason. Why relief? Why, if they suffer as much or more than what I'm suffering, will I feel relief? What am I looking for?
Okay, this person apologizes.
Okay, that's one thing. That we want the person to apologize. So that's kind of in another category. So we're saying one reason is envy. Another thing we may be looking for, some kind of relief. But I still want to know why we want relief. What kind of relief are we looking for? Now you said apology. So when someone hurts me, apologizes, then we feel they understand what happened, right? So what I'm looking for there, I say, is empathy and connection, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
So when the person who hurt me is somebody that I care about, particularly then, I may want them to suffer, and I'm thinking, well, if they suffer, then they'll get some empathy, correct? In that kind of case, I'm thinking, well, the reason this person hurt me is they didn't understand that they were hurting me. They didn't know they were hurting me. They didn't understand that I was feeling pain. So if they could understand that I was feeling pain, then they'll apologize and we'll fix our relationship and there'll be empathy and there'll be connection. So that's certainly one kind of relief. If I get connection, I get closure. What else might I want those who hurt me to suffer? What other kind of relief might I be looking for? Yes?
Retaliation.
Okay, vengeance. Why? What does this give me? What's that going to do for me?
They will understand.
Well, that's over here. Here I'm looking for understanding, closure, connection, empathy, apology. But what other kind of, what else could I be looking for?
That they won't do the same thing to someone else.
Or to me?
No, to someone else.
To someone, I don't care about me? Okay, so I don't want them to hurt anyone else. So I'm looking for some sort of safety for me or for others. So I'm thinking if they hurt me and I hurt them, or somebody hurts them, it doesn't have to be me. Right? If I can't hurt you, I could convince somebody else to hurt you. You follow? So you hurt me, and I don't have the power to hurt you, but I can go to someone else and say, oh, you know about them? Right? I could kind of hurt them indirectly. So I could be looking for safety. What else? With this retaliation, vengeance, what am I looking for?
Justice.
Okay. What will that give me? What will justice do?
Satisfaction.
What kind of satisfaction? What kind of satisfaction will it give me?
That I did right.
That I'm right.
That I did right that I punished him.
I did right. Okay, so what am I trying to get? I did right that I punished him. I'm trying to get what?
I'm virtuous or something.
I'm a virtuous person. That's interesting. Nobody ever said that before. All right. We can have that. I'm a good person.
Self-esteem,
self-approval. Okay, so one reason for justice could be, you know, I am good. Another I am good can be that we generally think that good people don't suffer, only bad people suffer. So if I suffer, but you don't, then that probably means that you're right and I'm wrong. But if I make you suffer more, then that can prove that I'm right and you're wrong. So there could be another way of thinking. One reason we can want people to suffer is to show that I was the one who was right. You follow? If you insult me and nothing happens to you, then and I'm the one who suffered, I must be in the wrong. So another reason we can want justice is to show I am right. What else could we be looking for? Injustice and retaliation.
Power and control.
And I see that this is very related to safety. Nobody can hurt me. Anybody who hurts me, I'm going to make sure they suffer. So that's also related to this one. I am right. What else might we be looking for? What else? Why else might we want justice?
Because we want them to learn something out of it.
We want them to learn something. For what purpose? We talked about we might want them to learn something so that they'll connect with us. We also might want them to learn something so we'll be safe. So they won't hurt us again, or they won't hurt anyone else. Any other reason we might want them to learn something?
To correct them.
To correct them, for their sake. Okay.
For their progress.
For their progress, okay.
Compassion.
Huh?
Compassion. Compassion.
Compassion. Any other reason? What else might we be trying to get? What about balance and harmony? Isn't that a lot of what justice is about? A lot of the satisfaction and relief is we're looking for balance and harmony. Okay, so what are the main things we're looking for here? We're looking for some sort of closure and understanding and connection. Or we're looking for balance, harmony. We're looking for being safe. We're looking for power. We're looking for being right and good. And we're looking for compassion. Are all those good things? Are these all good things?
Yes.
Is there anything wrong with any of these?
Power
could be wrong, but the soul also naturally has power. Power is one of the features of the soul, yes? Do liberated souls, are they powerful?
Yes.
Very powerful. So having power is part of our natural state. The only thing here that's wrong is this one, really. Of all the things we're looking for, when we say, that person hurt me, and that person should suffer as much or more than I am, of all the things we're looking for, the only one that's wrong is this. How dare anybody have more happiness than I have? But all the other things we're looking for are all very good things. These are all part of our spiritual nature. Yes, do you see that? In our spiritual nature, is there connection? Do we feel connection with other living entities? In our spiritual nature, do we have a sense of balance and harmony? Yes. Do we feel safe? When we're enlightened, spiritually enlightened, do we have spiritual power? Do we have a sense that we are good and we're right? We have a sense of our own goodness? And we have compassion? Yes, we do, okay? Now, the question is that if I say, that person hurt me and that person should suffer, do I actually get these things?
No.
You see, the way illusion works is illusion says, you want all these things and this is how to get it. But illusion is cheating us. Illusion is cheating us. What usually happens when I say that person hurt me and that person should suffer? What usually happens?
I suffer.
First of all, I get full of anger, fear, right? And then what does the other person usually do? You're wrong and you should suffer. And it keeps going. And my dear friends, it can go on for more than one life. There's many stories in the scriptures of these kinds of things going on for more than one life. And in this life, some of the people that we're having these conflicts with, we have had these conflicts with them before in another life, and we've come back to fight again. Yes, very good. Actually, one time there was one young woman who came to me and told me She said, my mother was not a very good mother. She wasn't very loving. She wasn't very caring. I had a really difficult childhood. So we were talking this and that. And then finally I said to her, maybe this is coming from another life. So she got very offended. She said, are you suggesting that I was this cruel to somebody in another life as my mother was to me? So, of course, maybe that was the fact. But I said, no. I'm not saying that. I said, what I'm saying is maybe in another life, you two had some difficulty. And in that life, you desired closure. You wanted this balance, this harmony, this closure, and you didn't get it. So you took birth again with this person in this life looking for closure. Because this girl kept saying to me, I want my mother to apologize. I want my mother to apologize. I want her to understand. I want her to apologize. I said, she might never apologize. She said, then how will I get closure? I said, you know, suppose your mother never apologizes and you still want closure. What will happen? And she went, oh. So before we start looking at what forgiveness is and how we can really find all of these through forgiveness, we're going to first look at justice. Because there's one way of understanding forgiveness that has to do with justice. In the context of justice, what forgiveness means is that the person doesn't have to have some sort of punishment for their crime. It's a very specific meaning of forgiveness. A person is a thief, but they don't go to jail. But if you think about what justice is, what justice involves, it involves something we call due process. Yes? Everybody knows what due process is?
No.
No? And it should be by a disinterested person. Or persons. Due process means that you have some sort of a system for figuring out who's guilty. Because remember, in the opposite of forgiveness, there's two parts, right? That person hurt me and they should suffer. Well, how do you know that person hurt you? That may be a story. Just like Emperor Pericet, he decided that sage hurt him. Had the sage hurt him? Did the sage really hurt him?
No.
So his first step was wrong. How many of us had somebody say that we did something wrong when we were actually innocent? How many of you have had that problem? So many years ago, when I was running a school, we had a family from Brazil. And the parents came to America maybe 2 years before the children. Sometimes the governments let the parents come and not the children. So the parents were there, and then the children came later. And when the children came, they didn't speak English. They spoke Portuguese. They spoke little bit of English. So they were in our school, and their mother was cooking for the school. She was cooking lunch for all of the students. So one day, right before lunch, I had gotten a phone call that was a little upsetting. So I said to the other teacher, I'm feeling upset right now. I don't think I can eat. Please save my lunch for me, and I'm going to go to the temple shop. I'll come back later. So the next day, those children didn't come to the school, and I heard, not from the parents, I heard from someone else, they've taken the children out of your school. Why? I had no idea. And I tried to talk to the parents, they wouldn't talk to me. So I asked other people, why are these children out of the school? They said, because you insulted their mother in front of them. Couldn't understand. I didn't insult their mother. What were they talking about? I had no idea what they were talking about. This went on for 2 or 3 months. And I would ask people in the community, I said, what did I do? They said, I don't know, something about you insulting their mother. Then finally our GBC, you know, the GBC in ISKCON, in the Hare Krishna movement, that's the person who's in charge of a whole geographical area. So he came to visit, and I told him what happened, and I said, can you please try to find out what is their complaint? And then he came to me and he said, something about that you didn't want to eat their mother's cooking, that it made you sick, and that you would rather buy something from a shop. And I said, I didn't say that. And again, I couldn't understand it. That night when I went to bed, I was thinking, what are they talking about? And then I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning, completely awake, and the whole day replayed. And oh, then I understood what happened. So the next morning, we were in the temple room. I saw the father there, and I stood by the door. I wouldn't let him leave. And I said, you stay here and talk to me. And I said, you talk to me in front of the deities. And I said, listen, this is what happened that day. And your children just came from Brazil. They didn't know English. They didn't understand what happened. Anyway, we settled and we became friends. So what did this family not do? They did not do what we call due process. They didn't find out what actually happened. So due process is what happens in a civilized society, in a justice system, where, you know, they do an investigation, they call witnesses, they interview you, they find out the facts. And this due process is done by a disinterested, not uninterested, but disinterested person, not the person who was hurt. So I don't know what it's like in this country, but in America where I'm from, you cannot be on a jury if you even were a victim of a similar crime. So you cannot judge somebody who stole something if someone has stolen something from you, because then they figure you are not impartial. So justice is given by disinterested, impartial,
neutral
persons who use due process. Now we're going to look here. If you look on your paper, the rest of this paper is for you to look at later, but the one thing, here right at the bottom of the left-hand side where it says Mahabharata. So here's talking about forgiveness in the sense of justice being done by someone in the government. And here, Prahlad Maharaj explains forgiveness. One day, Bali approached Prahlad and said, which is actually meritorious, forgiveness or the use of strength? Prahlad says, neither forgiveness nor the use of prowess is meritorious in all situations. If one were to always forgive, then his servants, dependents, enemies, and even strangers would disrespect him. When one always forgives, then mean-spirited servants gradually steal away all of his wealth and fail to respond to his commands. On the other hand, one who simply punishes and never forgives soon finds himself to be bereft of all friends. Indeed, everyone comes to hate such an unforgiving person, and when there is the slightest opportunity, they do something to harm him. Therefore, the conclusion is that prowess and forgiveness should be exhibited at the proper times. My dear Bali, the following person should be forgiven: one who has done nice service in the past, even if guilty of a grave fault; one who offends simply due to ignorance or folly; one who is a first-time offender; one who has committed some wrong against his will; and in addition, other offenders may sometimes be forgiven just to create a good public image. The following person should not be forgiven: One who has knowingly offended and yet claims to be innocent, even if his offense is slight, and a second offender, no matter how small the crime. All right. So this is talking about a certain kind of forgiveness where government, impartial persons in government, decide that although a person may be guilty, that they are not going to be rectified through punishment. But in any case, the first step, when somebody hurts us, the first step needs to be due process. Not to assume that my understanding of the situation is the same as the truth. We're so quick to assume that what, however I understand things is the same as the absolute truth. And one of the first things we learn in the Hare Krishna movement is that we have four defects. Right? What are our four defects?
Illusion.
Mistakes. Imperfect senses. And cheating. So if we're not experiencing constant ecstatic love of God, then we must have these four defects. That means that we may not be right. We may not be right. I remember one time saying something to my son, and he said, "Mother, are you sure?" And I said, "Yes, I'm sure." And then he said, "Are you 100% sure?" And then I thought, I said, "No, not 100% sure." So we may be wrong. We may not know the whole story. We may not know the whole story. Maybe there's something else going on. So the first thing to do, always, the first thing to do is always due process. And if the harm done to us is serious, then due process has to be done by an impartial person, perhaps in the government. Is that clear? Okay? It is not our place, if someone hurts us, to restore balance in the universe by hurting them. It's not our job. And you can say, well, suppose government doesn't do their job, then you can always complain to God. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharatya bhutinam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. And he will take care of it. Not necessarily when and how you want him to, but he will take care of it. So that's the first step, is due process. Okay, the second step in forgiveness, and this is extremely important. If you don't do this step, the rest of this will not work. Okay? This is just, should be common sense. This should be just civilized behavior. So many times we don't do this, right? Oh, they did this. Oh, they did that. We have no idea what actually happens. Okay, this next thing is to connect with Krishna. Who is going to fill me with compassion? Krishna. Who is going to show me that I am an all good soul? Krishna. Who is going to give me real spiritual power? Krishna. Who's going to make me realize that I'm safe, that I'm a soul, that I can't be hurt, that nobody can hurt me? Krishna. Who is the source of all balance and harmony? Krishna. Who's going to give me understanding, connection? Krishna. All of these things, my dear friends, I'm going to get from Krishna. So before I can act forgiving with somebody, I got to take care of what drives me to want to identify and harm. What is it that's pushing me? You suffer. What pushes me to that? That I'm not feeling this. Right? So first I've got to feel this. So I've got to connect with Krishna. Now if you like Sanskrit, you can use the Sanskrit mantra. Yoga Kshema Vaham Yaham. Bhagavad Gita 9:22. And you can also remember Bhagavad Gita 245, Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. And you can put those together. Niryoga Kshema Atmavan, Yoga Kshema Vaham Yaham. And that can be your nice little Sanskrit mantra if you like Sanskrit. What that means is, yoga means what you don't have, you want to connect to, and kshema means what you have, you want to protect. Krishna says, Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Don't worry about getting things, don't worry about protecting things, be in the self. Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Be in the self. Why? How? Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. Krishna says, what you need, what you want to protect, I'm giving you that. Krishna's unlimited. Now that doesn't mean that Krishna's going to protect, you know, your socks. Your socks are going to get holes in them, okay? I mean, I have some really good, these are really nice socks from camping stores, and takes them about 3 years to get holes in them. But eventually they get holes in them, right? Krishna's not going to protect my socks or my glasses or my sari or my hair. But Krishna's going to protect all this stuff here. You follow? This is what Krishna's going to protect, and if you don't have it, he'll give it to you. And we don't need anyone in the world to treat us in any way to get this stuff. Everyone in the world could hate us, and we can still have all of this when we're connected with Krishna. And if everyone loves us, and we're not connected with Krishna, we're not going to feel this stuff. So connect with Krishna. And if you don't like Sanskrit, then you can use Urmila's English mantra. Krishna is always meeting all my needs in his own wonderful way. That's Urmila's English mantra. Krishna is always meeting all of my needs in his own wonderful way. So if you like Sanskrit, you can say Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan, Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. And of course, if you don't speak English, you can come up with your own mantra in Hungarian or Slovenian or whatever you speak. You can come up with some mantra that works for you. I have some other mantras. Another mantra I have is, everything will be okay, and even if it's not okay, it'll still be okay. And then I sort of refine that after a while to, in the end, everything will be okay, and if it's not okay, it's not the end. So I came up with these little, and I found them very helpful. You know, if somebody's mean to me, and somebody yells at me, and somebody insults me, I can just say, Krishna's meeting all of my needs in his own wonderful way, and everything will be okay in the end. So if it's not okay, it's not the end. And that helps me a little more than Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham, because I don't speak Sanskrit. I mean, I speak a little Janani Swalpa Swalpam Sanskritam, but not really enough to make it part of my brain. But anyway. So something where you connect with Krishna, where you say, Krishna, you meet all of my needs. You're meeting all of my needs. I just have to connect with you. When I connect with you, then I feel connection and closure and balance and safety and power and goodness and compassion. And I don't need to get that from anybody else. Even if everyone who's ever hurt me never apologizes and never rectifies, it doesn't matter. I can still get all of that. So that's really, 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 really important. If you don't do that, you won't be able to do the next things. It just won't work. Because these things will still be driving us to hurt them. So what's our next step? So over here we look to Prahlad Maharaj. A lot of us think that forgiveness means the other person didn't hurt me. That forgiving someone means, well, you didn't do anything wrong. That's not what it means. I mean, it might, but not necessarily so. And you don't have this on your paper. But we have here Prahlad Maharaj. He says, it's not on your paper. Prahlad Maharaj says to Nrisimhadev, he says, I know my father, who was ignorant of your beautiful power and personality, was unnecessarily angry at you falsely thinking you were the killer of his brother. Thus, he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. I wish that he be excused for these sinful activities. So Prahlad Maharaj said, my father is a bad guy. Now his father was a really bad guy. His father tried to kill him many times, in many ways, just because he wanted to love Krishna. That's really bad. And Prahlad said, my father was a really bad guy. He was a demon. He did sinful activities against you, Lord, and he did sinful activities against me. So forgiveness does not mean that you become a fool and you say, no, he didn't do anything wrong. That's not forgiveness, okay? Forgiveness is, yes, the person did something wrong. I no longer need the person to learn for me, okay? If I've connected with Krishna, then that person does not need to understand that they did something wrong for me to get closure and understanding, because I've already gotten that from Krishna. Woo! I've gotten all that from Krishna. I don't need that from the other person. And I don't need the other person to understand they've done something wrong for justice and balance. I'm getting that from Krishna. And I don't need the other person to understand they've done something wrong for safety. I'm getting that from Krishna. And if you worry about safety, there's another mantra. Rakhe Krishna Madhe Ke, Madhe Krishna Rakhe Ke. And we have a little song we teach to the children. Rakhe Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rakhe Ke, Rakhe Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rakhe Ke. If Krishna wants to save me, no one can kill me. If Krishna wants to kill me, no one can save me. I mean, that really helped me. That really helped me. A couple months ago, somebody wrote me this very nasty letter that was very threatening. And I looked at the letter and I went, Rakhe Krishna Hare. So I don't need, and then I was peaceful. Seriously, then I was peaceful. If Krishna wants to save me, no one can kill me. If Krishna wants to kill me, no one can save me. So I don't need the other person to learn for safety. That's in Krishna's hands. And I'm a soul anyway. Nobody can hurt me. I don't die. What is the problem? So I don't need the other person to learn for closure. I don't need the other person to learn for balance and harmony. I don't need the other person to learn for safety. But I do want the other person to learn for compassion. I do want the other person to learn for compassion. So how many of us here have learned a lesson, a good lesson, an important lesson, something we're really happy about, and we're really glad we learned it, but we learned it through some sort of difficulty or suffering? How many of us have learned a good lesson through difficulty or suffering? Okay. And how many of us have learned a good lesson, an important lesson, we're glad we learned that lesson, and we learned it in some wonderful way? Okay. How would we like to learn our lessons from now on? Who? Okay, anybody want to learn through suffering?
No.
No? Okay. So the little boy Dhruva, when his stepmother insulted him, he went to his real mother, and he was, oh, my stepmother has insulted me. And she said, my dear boy, do not wish anything inauspicious for others. If you wish bad for others, you will have to suffer from the same pain. So there's at least two reasons why we learn through suffering. One is we're foolish. And Krishna tries to teach us in a nice way, and we just don't listen. But the other reason we learn through suffering is that we want our enemies to learn through suffering. If we would like to start learning through joy more and more and more, then wish that your enemies learn through joy. And this is the most basic principle of forgiveness. May you learn through joy. That's the essence of forgiveness. May you learn through joy. May you learn through joy. Now, they might not. I can't control that. And that's like when due process, why is due process done by impartial persons? Because those impartial persons have no desire to see the wrongdoer suffer. And if the wrongdoer can learn through joy, they'll do that. It says in the Bhagavatam that Krishna is very... He feels bad about the fact that people have to be punished. He doesn't like it. He wishes that everyone could learn through joy. So you wish, may you learn through joy. May you learn through joy. So due process, connect with Krishna, may you learn through joy. Now, when I first started studying about forgiveness, which is a whole story that I don't think I have time to tell, I decided that I would try to practice this. I should say a little bit that I used to think that forgiveness was for saintly people, not for me. That after I became a saintly person, then I would be forgiven. And right now, that was out of the question. Later, I'd be forgiven. And I read one story that really changed my thinking on that. And I decided that if I ever wanted to become a saintly person, I better start trying to be forgiving. And so I did this very mechanically. I remember the first time it was some parent with the school who was angry at me about something, and they were coming. I don't remember what they were angry with me about anymore. And they were yelling at me, and I just was like, Krishna, you're taking care of all my needs. Please help this person to learn through joy. Krishna, you're taking care of my needs. Please help this person to learn through joy. And immediately, even though I thought that very mechanically, there wasn't any heart in it at all, immediately I felt complete peace. Immediately I felt all this nice stuff. Just immediately. And I felt like I had a shield around me and that the person couldn't hurt me. It was a very extraordinary experience which made me very interested in this topic. So may you learn through joy. One should wish well to everyone. We should be the well-wisher of everyone. Our friends, neutral enemies, everyone. The animals, the plants, the birds, everyone. May you be happy. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be joyful. May you find Krishna. Never to wish ill to anyone ever. Always to wish well to everyone. And that, of course, is exactly the opposite of this, isn't it? I may be suffering, but may you learn through joy. I may be suffering, and I may be suffering because of you, apparently. We'll get to that in a minute. But may you learn through joy. May you all have more than me. May you have as much or more than me, always. May everyone have joy. There's so many Sanskrit mantras like that, right? May the whole world be happy. May all cruel people be pacified. Just imagine if everyone in the world thought like this. What would happen to the world?
No war.
There'd be no war. No violence. That is a spiritual world. The spiritual world isn't just a place where there is desire trees and beautiful gopis and lotus flowers. The spiritual world is a place where everyone wishes well for everyone. Where there's no envy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said there's only two rules in the spiritual world. Have love and no envy. What does love mean? Love means may you be happy. That's the definition of love. May you be happy. All right, last thing. Remember, the opposite of forgiveness was, you hurt me, may you suffer. So we got rid of the may you suffer thing, but now we're going to get rid of the you hurt me thing. Remember, Rakhe Krishna Marai K, Marai Krishna Rakhe K. Nobody can do anything to me, ever, good or bad, without the sanction of Krishna. Can they? No, they can't. If somebody hurts me, Krishna must have allowed that to happen. Nobody has power above God. I mean, sometimes people try to hurt me and they can't. Does this happen to you? Somebody tries to hurt you and they just can't? Does this happen to you? Krishna didn't allow it. But sometimes Krishna allows it. Why? Krishna's our friend. So if he allows it, he must have some reason. What can I learn? What is my lesson? What can I learn from this? So, what I found is that there's two categories. The first category is what I call a mirror. The way that the universe works is I do something and that comes back to me. What I do is mirrored to me. So what is happening to me, I have to give out first. If something comes to me, that means I sent it out. If somebody is hurting me, I have probably hurt somebody else. And I have probably hurt somebody in a similar way. So I find that most of us do not believe this. Even if for many, 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 many years we say, yes, yes, I believe in the law of karma, I believe in the law of karma, we don't think it applies to me. Or we think, you know, I'm such a nice person now. I'm really wonderful. I'm selfless. I'm kind. I'm loving. I'm caring. If someone is hurting me now, I must have been a bad person a long, long time ago. I mean, it must have been at least 200 lifetimes ago. Because right now, I am just wonderful. So, many years ago, I decided that maybe the law of karma applies to me, and maybe it applies to me now. That was just sort of an experiment. Also, you see, Krishna says, karmadi nirdahati kintu chabakti bhajam. When you're a devotee, you don't get karma if you've already learned your lesson. You know, there are some schools where you have to take the classes even if you already know everything. Isn't that awful? They made me do that in school. I hated that. I mean, I remember when I was in secondary school, I had to take a class in American history. And I went to the head of the school and I said, I have been studying American history since I was 6 years old. I already know this. They said, too bad, you are required to take the class. So the law of karma usually works like that. When you're just a materialistic person, you did something, you get the reaction. But once you're under Krishna's protection, it's not like that anymore. When you're under Krishna's protection, and we're under Krishna's protection, the moment we say, my dear Lord, from this day on, I am yours. As soon as we say, my dear Lord, from this day on, I am yours, from that time, we are under Krishna's protection. So Krishna doesn't make you take classes that you already know. You can test out of your classes. You understand? That the kind of school that I ran was like that. If a student came and said, I already know algebra, then I gave them a test. And if they passed the test, they didn't have to take the class. So any test we've already passed, we're not going to get a karmic reaction for that once we've surrendered to Krishna. What does that mean? That means the only reactions we're getting are for things we haven't learned. Do you understand? It took me so many years to understand this. Yes, any reactions I'm getting, once I've surrendered to Krishna, if I'm getting a reaction, that means I don't know it. I don't know it. I haven't learned it. So generally, if it's something I haven't learned, that somebody's doing to me, it means I'm also doing it. And in my experience, this is true about 80% of the time, and this is true about 20% of the time. So when somebody hurts us, we can assume that we are hurting somebody else in a similar way. And in fact, this just happened to me yesterday, but I'm going to tell you a different story, because yesterday is still a little too fresh for me to tell that story. Maybe I'll tell that story in a year. But yesterday someone hurt me, and as soon as they did, I could understand, oh, I do the same thing to somebody else. I kind of had a heavy day yesterday when I was like, oh my goodness, I do this to other people. And I wrote a few letters of apology. But when I first understood this principle, or started to understand this principle of the mirror, I'll tell you that story, because that's an old story. It's not bothering my ego anymore. So at that time, I was in a community running a school, and the leaders of that community would sometimes have management meetings, and sometimes I was part of the meeting and sometimes I wasn't. If they thought they would discuss something that didn't affect the school, I wouldn't come to the meeting. But you know what it's like in meetings. Sometimes things come up that weren't planned. So sometimes in the meeting, a discussion would come up that involved the school. And later they would contact me and say, Ramila, we made this decision at the meeting, and you're going to have to change this thing for your school. And I would say, look, if something happens at the meeting that involves me, can you invite me to the meeting? You know, stop and call me and say, we want you to be part of the discussion. And they would say, yes, you're right, you're right. We'll do that next time. Okay. And then it would happen again. And I'd say, please don't do this. Oh, we're so sorry. We just forgot. We won't do it again. And it would happen again. So after a while, I decided maybe I'm doing the same thing. But I didn't think I was doing the same thing. I didn't see it. I did a scan in my mind. Do I ever do this? Do I ever make decisions about someone else's life without consulting with them? And I thought, I never do that. I thought, well, maybe I do. And I just don't see it. So I did the only thing you can do to figure this out, my dear friends. You can't figure this out with your mind. You cannot figure this out with your mind. You cannot figure this out with your mind. The mind is a liar and a distraction machine, and it won't work. Do not trust the mind. The way you figure this out is through prayer. So I prayed. I said, my dear Krishna, please show me if I ever make decisions about other people's lives without consulting with them. So I prayed that way. It was at night, and then went to sleep, and I forgot about it. Okay? You ever make a prayer and then you forget about it? I forgot about it. So the next morning, I went to the temple, and before I started chanting Hare Krishna, I said, my dear Radharani, if I've offended any devotee, please let me rectify it. Now, I don't pray that way every day, but I prayed that way that day. So I was chanting. While I was chanting, I was thinking, I don't want to offend anyone. So at the end of the, when I was going to leave the temple, I had to leave early. And I stopped by the kitchen, and I said, could I get a plate to take with me, because I have to go early? And one of the cooks said, Ramila, all the time I was cooking, I was thinking, I really need to tell Ramila something. But I think you'll be angry. No, you can tell me. I won't be angry. She said, 1 year ago, you offended my friend. And that's why she hasn't come to the temple very much. I said, oh, thank you. And she said, you're not angry? I'm like, no, I was praying like that this morning. So I went home and I called this woman. And I had forgotten what happened. What happened a year ago is I was going to help a mother when she was giving birth to a baby. So I used to help many times, maybe 50, 60 times. I helped women when they were having babies. And there was another woman who this mother had invited. But the woman she invited was a little intense. So I had said to the mother, I don't think you should have this other woman at your birth. I don't think she has the right energy. And she said, okay, I'll trust you. If you don't think we should have her, I'll tell her not to come. So the person who was calling me was the person, or who I called, was the person who I had said, you shouldn't have her come. And she said, you know, you really hurt me when you told the mother that I shouldn't be there. Now then you know what she said next, right? She said, why did you make a decision about my life without consulting with me? And I was at the other end of the phone and I went, wow. So what I have found since that one day is that about 80% of the time when other people hurt us, we are doing something similar to other people and we don't even know it. And what's coming at us is a mirror where Krishna is saying to us, stop it. This is what you're doing. Don't do this. It hurts people. It doesn't please me. Please stop it. So again, the only way I know to figure this out is prayer. Now, when you regularly pray like that and regularly want to see that, Krishna will show you even without prayer, which is what he did to me yesterday. Wow. But I'll tell you, it's so nice when you see that. I mean, it's kind of heavy. When you see, oh, you know, I hurt people. That's a little intense. But it's also nice because then you can do something about it. Then you're not just a victim. Right? That person hurt me. That's the victim. But I'm not a victim. I'm doing it. I'm getting back what I do. And if I see that, then guess what? I can stop. And when I stop, then it stops coming back to me. Isn't that nice? It's really nice. It's wonderful. Now, sometimes it's not a mirror. Sometimes there's another lesson. So then again, we can pray, Krishna, what is the lesson? Sometimes we're just simply meant to become more patient or more tolerant. Sometimes we're meant to move to another city. Sometimes, I mean, it can be all different kinds of lessons. Seriously. Sometimes the lesson is to give up a certain attachment. Sometimes the lesson is to make some change in our life, externally or internally. And we can pray, don't do this with the mind. We can pray to Krishna, what is the lesson? How do you want me to respond? What is it you want me to learn? First, always ask, am I doing this? Because that's probably what it is. And if that doesn't, if you're not going to get that, then what is my lesson? What am I supposed to learn? I mean, sometimes the lesson is, I'm not supposed to work in this kind of situation. I'm not supposed to associate with these sort of people. I'm not supposed to do this kind of service. Sometimes that's the lesson. You know, it's a different lessons. You know, sometimes the lesson is I'm supposed to be more patient. Sometimes the lesson is I need to chant Hare Krishna more. You know, sometimes the lesson is I have to meditate on Krishna more. I mean, there can be a variety of lessons, but there's always some kind of a lesson. There's always something there for me. There's always some good that I can take out of it for myself. So these are the four steps in forgiveness. Due process, connect with Krishna, may you learn through joy, what is my lesson? Due process, connect with Krishna, may you learn through joy, what is my lesson?
process.
Oh, we can do better than that.
Do process.
The Sanskrit word for forgiveness is kshanti. 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 Which is exactly the same word for peacefulness. It's the same word. And that word is one of the qualities of a saintly person, and sometimes it's translated as forgiveness, and sometimes it's translated as peacefulness. Krishna says, what is the question of happiness without peace? Can we be happy if we're in anxiety? Is that possible? No matter what you have, no matter what your situation is, if you're in anxiety, can you feel happy? No. How can there be any happiness without peace? Peace and forgiveness are the same. Now, we shouldn't be forgiving to find peace. We should be forgiving because that's what pleases Krishna. And it's part of our bhakti. It's part of our way to connect with Krishna. So we have just a few minutes. Did I talk loudly enough?
Yeah.
Was it slow enough? Okay. Questions, comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
For lecturing, if I understood you well, you said if there is a bad situation for us externally and we feel hurt, we shouldn't repress as if it didn't happen. So what to do and how to do it? Especially if this person is somebody we work with or live with.
You have to connect with Krishna. You have to connect with Krishna. We cannot repress our needs. Okay, these are... Thank you. These things are part of the soul. You can't repress your spiritual nature. It won't work. The reason we feel upset is that we think these things are threatened. When somebody hurts me, I get upset because I think, I'm going to lose connection. I'm going to lose balance. I'm going to be threatened. I'm not going to be safe. I won't have any power. I'll lose goodness. You understand? That these things get threatened. This is what's getting threatened. Find them in Krishna. And then you'll stop the journey.
Maybe I would rephrase the question. How to communicate some difficult situation with another person?
That is another seminar. Seriously. I'm really serious. That is another seminar. This is about what goes on inside you. Now, why do I need to communicate to another person? Is another question. Do I need to? What I have discovered is that if you do this... Oh, what was it again? I can't remember. What was it again? What was the first one?
You process.
Thank you. I thought it was something like that. What was the second one? Great. Oh, God, you guys are helping me so much. And the next one. May you merge through joy. And the next one. What I have found, just personal experience, is that 8 times out of 10, if I do that, I don't need to communicate anything to the other person at all. And it just happened to me yesterday. Somebody did something to me yesterday that was extremely painful. It was really, 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 really painful. I felt shame and humiliation and embarrassment and grief and agony. And I just did this. And it turned out it was a mirror. Woo-hoo. And I started to write the other person a letter. At first I was writing them a letter about how it was a mirror. And then halfway through the letter, I thought, I don't need to write this person a letter. There's no need. Whatever this person has to learn, may they learn through joy, let Krishna teach them. It's not, I don't have to teach this person anything. I've been friendly with this person, I've worked with them, I'm just going to keep on working with them. That person didn't hurt me, I hurt myself. They were just the instrument. Ah, it's a mirror. Ah. I ordered it. I typed in my order and I got it back. Why do I need to tell them anything? Whatever they have to learn, Krishna will teach them. May they learn through joy. I was completely peaceful. I started to write something, then I stopped. I said, why am I writing this? What's driving me to write this? What's my purpose? To teach this person something? To defend my ego? Or what do I want to do that for? Poof! So I found that the vast majority of the time, you do not need to explain anything to the other person at all if you do this. It just doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And if the problem is that it's a mirror, all you have to do is stop doing it yourself. And then it will stop coming back to you. Krishna's really cool. You know, you pass the exam, you stop getting the class. You follow? You pass the exam, you stop getting the class. If it's another lesson, do the other lesson. Now, there are some times when you do need to communicate to the other person. But that is a whole art. How to communicate to someone else when they've hurt you and you're upset. And usually when we're doing that, we're looking for this kind of stuff. And there is a way to do that. There is a way to do that. There's a whole science of how to do that. But that's beyond the scope of what I can do in 1 or 2 minutes. Okay, I just very, 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 very briefly, don't attack. Don't attack and don't defend. I'm just going to give you a knot. Don't attack and don't defend. And just talk about facts. Just facts. Complete facts. No attacking, no defending. No emotional adverbs and adjectives and verbs and nouns. Nothing emotional. No judgments. No, you were very inconsiderate. None of that. So it's basically just facts. When you told me you would come at 5 o'clock and you didn't come until 7 and you didn't call, it made life very difficult for me because I had promised someone else that I would be there at 6 o'clock. And so, you know, I was very sad that I couldn't meet my commitments. Would next time, would you please call me if you're going to be late? Something like that. Instead of, you inconsiderate, useless person. I mean, just recently I had a situation where somebody had written to a devotee that they worked under, you are very harsh and cold. And then the person wrote back, Well, you just spread pain wherever you go. Don't do that. Just don't do that. If you have to express something, do it without judgment, without criticism, without blaming, without attacking. Just very simple facts. Just very simple facts. When you told everybody else in the temple that I'm a worthless demon, you know, then when I came the next day to do my service, they all told me to leave and go home, and I was very sad, and would you please talk to me about the situation? Okay? Basic, that's basic. I mean, really, to learn that kind of thing takes quite a while, but just if you get the principle, stick to facts, no judgment, no attacking, no blaming, no defending yourself. No, I'm wonderful, you're terrible. Okay? I'm wonderful, you're terrible is another way of trying to hurt somebody. So if you absolutely must express, if you do all this and you still really feel that you have to express things, which you probably will not feel that way, but if you do still feel that way, then do so in a way that doesn't cause any harm to the other person at all. You're not doing any harm or defending yourself. You're just stating the facts and asking for some kind of rectification or some kind of action. But that is a whole art. There's also a whole art to apology. And I'm meditating on developing a seminar on how to apologize. Haven't developed that yet, but that's in progress. Yes?
What if there is a person that's like a teacher, someone you really trust, and that person is doing something very manipulating, very wrong, and you know there are other people in the class, and the same thing can happen to them. Is it okay if you just take care of yourself? And
well, this isn't just taking care of yourself.
I mean, is it okay to just say out loud what is going on? Just that.
Well, you can. Sometimes you can discuss it with a higher authority. I mean, I had a professor in graduate school who, he was a statistics professor, and we used to call the class sadistics. So he would cover so many difficult things so fast. In a 2-hour class, he would teach 5 new things, and the second he'd teach one thing, he'd go on to something else before you could digest it. It was just wild. And then the grade was just based on 3 exams, and the exam had an in-class part and a take-home part. So we took that first in-class exam, and it was how many people in that class? 40, 45? Only one person passed that exam. I think it's the first test I ever failed in my entire life. And when you're at the PhD level, if you fail one class, you're thrown out of the school. I mean, it was pretty serious, you know? And there were only 3 exams, and we all failed the first in-class exam. You know, we were all sitting there kind of like... And I looked at the exam, and there were questions on the exam that were not taught in the class. And I had all the evidence. I mean, he assigned us certain pages in the book, and I went through those pages, and that material was not there. It was in another part of the book, but it wasn't in that part of the book. And I went through all the class notes and all of the handouts, and it wasn't there. So I went up to the professor, and I said, "My dear professor, there were 5 problems on this exam that you never taught in the class and were not in the book." And he said, "I'm sure I taught it in the class." I said, it's not in the handouts, it's not in the books, and it's not in anything you discussed." "No, I'm sure it's there." So I went to his superior. Okay? I went to a superior, and I took all the evidence. And the superior said, "Too bad."
Thank you.
You know, so then what did I do? I had to go to God. Krishna, please help. You know, and then I figured out that if I got a perfect score on the take-home part of the exam, I could still pass the class. So I failed all three in-class exams. So did everybody. I think maybe one or two people passed them. But I got 100% on the take-home part, and that way I passed the class. And I just had to do this. You know, that was all I could do. So yeah, you can do that. You can do due process. You can go to the person. I mean, I went to the professor privately. I didn't go in front of all the other students. And I came with the evidence, and I did due process, and this is the evidence. And the professor didn't care, and then I went to the head of the department, again with all the evidence, and the head of the department said, I'm not going to do anything about this. Then what do? Then you have to, you know, I wasn't going to take it to the police. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the kind of thing you're going to go to the police about. So then I had to just take it to God and say, Krishna, you deal with this. What else can you do? And then you do the other. And you depend on Krishna. But sure, you can do it, but do it in such a way that doesn't embarrass the person. Do it in a way that's compassionate and just factual without blaming. Sure, you can do that. Depends on your relationship with them. If they won't listen, they won't listen. What can you do then? Is that all right?
Thank you.
Is that all right? Anybody else? Yes.
When you said in a moment, when we say, Krishna, I'm yours, in that moment we are under Krishna's protection.
Yes.
How can a beginning in Bhakti Yoga, the Sadhaka, how can he do this kind of, you know, on what is the process? What is the process to...
Krishna, I am yours.
Yes.
That's it.
This is the
one.
Yes. I can say this every day, but still in my heart and in my mind.
Well, not Krishna, I'm yours. You know. You don't have to ask me. You know when you mean something and when you don't mean something. You know. You say it and mean it. Krishna, from this day on, I am yours. I surrender to you. I mean, of course, when we say that, we don't really mean it 100%. And we'll see as the years go on all the ways in which we're not surrendered. But when you say that, you mean it as much as you can mean it at the time. All we can ever do is be as sincere as we can be at the time. I can't be more sincere now than I can be now. Duh. You know, I can't. I just can't. I might want to or not want to. Doesn't matter. I can only be as sincere now as I am sincere now. I don't have an option. So even if I only have this much sincerity right now, if I give that much sincerity to Krishna now, then I'm giving Krishna all my sincerity now. You understand? That's right. It's my capacity. And as you get more sincere, then you give Krishna more sincerity. But if you give Krishna everything, all your sincerity now, that's enough. Has to be enough. What other option is there? There's no other option. It's okay. I don't have to fully surrender to Krishna now the way, you know, Radharani surrenders. I can't do that. I don't have that ability. You follow? I can't. I can't surrender to Krishna the way Prabhupada surrenders to Krishna. I don't have that capacity. But whatever capacity I have, I say, Krishna, I'm giving you everything I have right now. That's good enough. Good enough. And tomorrow you can give a little more. And that's enough. Isn't that nice? It's enough. Has to be. There's not an option as to whether or not that's enough. Okay? Very good question. Anybody else? Yes. He's the first one. Oh, you are so kind.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Well,
I have a question in regards to when we see someone else being really hurt, and we really see the injustice, and we're even more hurt at that time if that person was hurting us.
Mm.
What can we do in such a case? Just wish for that the...
Well, we should always do this. We should wish that everybody learned through joy always. But when it's someone else who's getting hurt, when it's not me directly, then the answer depends a lot on who am I and what is my relationship. What's my relationship with the person who's hurting, and what's my relationship with the person who's being hurt? Am I the impartial government person to do due process or not? I mean, I had a situation some years ago where somebody was telling lies about somebody that I really cared about. They were making up lies about a very good friend of mine, and my friend didn't want to do anything. So I couldn't do due process because I was a friend. But I went to someone else. We have in ISKCON something called ISKCON Resolve, which settles problems. So I went to ISKCON Resolve, and I said, these people are saying this thing about my friend, and they're causing my friend a lot of trouble. Can you please come in and solve the situation? And they did, thankfully. So you can invoke due process. Sometimes you can invoke due process. You can go to some authority. You can say, this is what's happening. This is what I see is happening. Can you please find out the truth of the situation? Always remember that I don't necessarily have the right story, right? That how I see things may not be the truth. So you can ask someone else to do process. Depends on the relationship. If I have a good relationship with the person who's doing the harm, I may be able to go and talk to them. If I don't have a good relationship with the person who's doing the harm, and I don't, and due process doesn't work, then all I have left is to try to deal with the victim and try to teach this to the victim and pray for the person. I mean, so it depends. What can I do? Sometimes I can intervene, sometimes I can't. I mean, we're very small, right? You know, we're not all powerful. I'm not God. I can't go in and save the situation all the time. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. Sometimes I can help, sometimes I can't help. You know, obviously if it's a very serious thing, you know, maybe I have to go to the police. You understand? And if you're in a country with a corrupt government, then what do? Then you just have to pray. You know, sometimes that's all you have. It depends. You know, that's really... Who am I? Who is the person? What is my relationship with them? Do I have some process for justice and inquiry? Always remember, I may not know the truth. Is there some process for inquiry into the matter? Is that all right?
Yeah.
And some things, you know, everything will have balance and harmony eventually. The universe is a universe of balance and harmony. It may not happen in my way, it may not happen in my time, but everything will come to balance in one way. And sometimes I can be the instrument of that, and sometimes I can't. And then there's a lesson for me. Maybe the lesson for me is humility. Maybe the lesson for me is I'm really small and I can't do anything about this. I don't have the power to do anything about it. Sometimes that's a lesson for me too. Okay, we can take one last question. You have a question?
So, thinking about the connect and to connect with grief, if I understand right, the connect coming with the need. If we know that grief taking care of all our needs and fact and problems.
Yes.
And when we are angry, when we have that feeling, we're not connected with that part. We are not connected. Because thinking about to cool down our anger, like cool down our fire, because we are not connected. So I thinking if you can get some way to connect with our need.
When we feel anger, it's almost always coming from some attachment or fear or envy. Anger is almost always, not always, but almost always the second emotion. When we're angry, it's usually because we're afraid of something or we're attached to something. Krishna talks about attachment, fear, and anger a lot in the Bhagavad Gita. Or because we're envious of somebody. So yes, you're right. A lot of this is we also have to connect with ourselves and our real feelings. But what I found is just simply saying, Krishna's going to meet all my needs. The reason I'm angry, the reason I'm upset, is I'm not connected with Krishna. I'm feeling that I don't have these things. I'm scared. I'm scared that if this person's doing this, then I'm going to lose love. I'm going to lose respect. I'm going to lose safety. I'm going to lose community. I'm going to lose the meaning in my life. I'm going to lose something in my life. But Rake Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rake Ke. No other living being has the power to take something from me unless Krishna wants them to take it from me. They just can't. And I have everything, internally I have everything I need. If you meditate like this, your anger will dissipate. It just will, because the anger is based on this kind of stuff. That's where the anger is coming from. Usually. It's a defense. We're afraid. Yogakshema Vahamyaham. Something I don't have, someone's going to keep me from getting. Something that I already have, somebody's going to take from me. Is that clear? Try it. Try it. This is experiential. This is not theoretical. Try it. The next time you feel angry at someone, Krishna's meeting all of my needs. If Krishna wants to save me, no one can kill me. If Krishna wants to kill me, no one can save me. Krishna's meeting all of my needs. If you want to write a list of your needs, do that. Krishna's meeting all of my needs. Krishna's going to keep me safe. I'm a soul. I can't be hurt. Krishna's going to meet my needs for love and communication and connection and understanding. Oh, this person didn't understand me. Krishna's going to meet my need for understanding. I'm not going to get perfect understanding or safety from this other person anyway. If you practice that, because it's real, it'll get easier and easier and easier, and you'll find that your anger then goes very quickly. In most cases, your anger will go almost instantly. In places where there's some heavy attachment, it may take a little longer. Sometimes if it's a really, really heavy attachment, it takes us a little while to do that connect with Krishna because we're so filled with fear. Is that okay? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.